No, I love that you asked about the amazement art. It is something new. It was a realization, whether on a stage in the Sydney Opera House performing, or my stage previously was a boardroom and doing a stock option pitch to venture capitalists potentially. What I learned from both of those is people remember those moments of the connection, the moment that you need to cling on to that they're going to talk about, that they're going to go back and share with their coworkers or their families or friends. And yes, magic is a part of it. Yes, speaker's a part of it. But the artistry of magic, I learned, is part art of human connection. And that's how I kind of brought that term around.
Welcome to No More Bad Events, a fun and insightful podcast for professional event organizers and for anyone at any level interested in producing nothing but the best events. Each week, we'll talk with legendary event professionals to get an inside look into what they think makes a great event. And in the process, we'll draw out insider secrets, non-traditional approaches, and compelling stories from the most captivating personalities in the business. No More Bad Events is produced and presented by eSpeakers, the most trusted online platform for the best keynote speakers in the world. And I'm your host, Scott Bloom, comedian, event MC, and now your podcast host. Let's get started. Hey, folks, thanks for dropping by. We always appreciate when you do. I am so excited for this episode because every so often I get to talk to a good friend. And I've been doing a lot of that on the podcast lately. This is someone who I've known of for years. We finally got to spend some time together at the National Speakers Association this past summer, where just when this drops, we probably had just finished. It's actually coming out right before we head off to the NSA conference in Phoenix. Anyway, I was talking with John Petz, a great guy, a great speaker, a great MC. And I have to tell you, this conversation really stuck with me. John calls himself an amazement artist, which might sound like marketing speak, but when you hear how he thinks about events, it actually makes perfect sense. John's background is fascinating. He started in tech sales, discovered he had this gift for magic, and somehow turned that into becoming one of the most sought-after MCs and keynote speakers in the business. But here's what I love about his approach. He doesn't just show up on event day and do his thing. John gets involved from the very beginning, sometimes 6 months out, working as what he calls a co-creative director. This isn't someone who treats MCing like an add-on expense. John has built his entire philosophy around the idea that a skilled MC is foundational to everything. Your ROI, your attendee engagement, the whole emotional flow of your event. He's thinking about the theme, the content, even the closing remarks long before anyone steps foot in the venue. What really impressed me is how John uses principles from magic to create what he calls moments of amazement. It's not about pulling rabbits out of hats. It's about understanding how to surprise people, how to create memorable experiences that stick with attendees long after they've gone home. He's constantly asking, wouldn't it be cool if, and then actually figuring out how to make those ideas happen. We talk about his journey from magic tricks to the National Speakers Association Hall of Fame, his Seven of Hearts Pay It Forward project, and this whole philosophy he has about killing boring meetings for good. John shares some great behind-the-scenes stories that are pretty remarkable, and he gives practical advice about how event planners can think differently about engagement and audience connection. So if you've ever been on the fence about hiring an MC, or if your management team needs convincing, this conversation goes way beyond the typical reasons and gets into what's really possible when you approach events with intention and creativity. So here's my conversation with the innovative and remarkably thoughtful, John Petz. But I do honestly want to know, what was your transition from magician? I'm sure you started as an entertainer, moved into maybe the MC space first or the keynote space first?
No, it was keynote space. I mean, the true off, not off the record, but just, yeah, magic as a kid. I'm a tech sales and marketing guy, but I used magic and I taught myself. I mean, I ended up with the job you always wanted, the corner office, company Mercedes, country club membership, 250 sales reps. And I had no interest in being there. None at all. I was performing for fun, but I would teach my salespeople like how to use magic as icebreakers and get in the door. And just like, and I, this is what I talked about, moments of amazement. And then I had other companies like vendors, like, hey, you think you could talk to our sales group kind of thing? And then vendors like, hey, could you talk? That's how it started. That's how I got here. I didn't intend on really doing this, but I always wanted to tour as a magician. I would have loved that. And I did a little bit, but my name wasn't in lights on the side of a building in Vegas. But no, it started as a humorist, I would say. I was trying to learn to be a keynote speaker. And then here's me 30 years old talking to companies like, well, I don't know anything. You know, how the imposter syndrome. What I knew is how to connect with people and how to let people know that they can create these moments and we can all do it. Magic isn't mad. But then the MC started. I helped a charity gala. And it probably was 20 years ago when I first did it. But I'm like, listen, you're not telling the story right. I can help you with this. And then they started booking me. And then some Jurassic Classic came and saw me and someone saw me. And I never knew that was a business, the MC side of it. But now it's a substantial, as you know, it's a substantial part of my business.
But you're not just an MC and you're just not a keynote. I know the way you work. You really embed yourself as a partner, almost as a consultant. So is that your offering?
We'll talk to that.
Yeah.
The John Petz experience is opening keynote, stay on to MC. The way, and you're similar, man, you get involved. I mean, I think, and this is one of the questions that we like, what don't people know? I'm like, no, MC, that part starts 6 months ahead of time. You don't just show up. The real work comes beforehand. And when you're on site, you execute what you plan and you create more content from hyper relevancy of what's there. But no, I want to, for some, it is more work and I try to price for it when I can, but it is helping them and, you know, pre-videos. I mean, look at you and your brother, right?
Right, Chad.
Yeah, well, forget his name, Chad.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff it is, I mean, I would call it a co-creative director for those who don't know. Then they rely on you and that's why, listen, cool, let's do this. Are you available next year? I'm like, listen, here's 3 years and let's sign this and let's make this happen together. There's my business model.
Oh, that's great. So you're setting up 3-year contracts, which is great.
I am booked into 2028 right now with MC contracts.
Wow, no that
joke.
Is great.
No joke, because I've just done two new ones for 3 year for 26, 27, 28.
Oh, that's great. And let's face it, they trust you and they know, oh, this is one thing we don't have to think about next year.
Yeah. Do it. If you don't, sign the multis. Then it's harder to raise rates sometimes, but I'm locked in for at least I've got, you know, whatever, those regulars. I'm not going to, well, I still need to book more business, but there's some regulars on the count. Literally, I have two in 2028, MC.
That is amazing. That is amazing.
I can't believe it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny about talking about MCs. A lot of people just think as that is just added expense. I think at this point, they don't understand how important that is to ROI, to really bringing out the best that's going to happen at that meeting. It's essential.
I wrote something that I was so happy with what I wrote. Common mistake you see, they think of us too late. Here's my line. A poor keynote speaker is exponentially better than a poor MC. Because if you got a bad MC, the keynote speaker, they know like, hey, he's going to be off stage or they are going to be off stage in 30 minutes. And I got to see you the next 6 times. And the moment you walk on stage, I'm like, a bad keynote is exponentially better than a bad MC. For that reason, they don't value, I think, us enough in terms of how we can build, how we can transition, how you can transform one emotion to emotion number two and make it seamless and take, I call it matching the emotion. If someone's really so hyper, then we have to go to a sad reflection of someone who passed. That's what we do, right? They don't see that or value that. But I don't know, do you like that line? I call it a line, but I was like, that is so true.
Oh, no, it's absolutely true. And since you have embedded yourself as almost an event partner, you're seeing the overall scope. You can also help them decide, hey, these are the best places to use me. I love the idea. I mean, I think all us keynote MCs would love to do that opening keynote at MC the rest of the meeting. That's a great business model.
That's the idea. Mm-hmm. Do I always book it? I bet it maybe 20% of the time. Like, oh, we've already got our keynotes.
Right. You're still there, so that works out great. I don't know if this is a rebranding, but it's the first time I've heard you use the term amazement artist. Is that something new? And what exactly does that mean, and how'd you come up with that?
No, I love that you asked about the amazement artist. It is something new. It was a realization, whether on a stage in the Sydney Opera House performing, or, my stage previously was a boardroom and doing a stock option pitch to venture capitalists potentially. What I learned from both of those is people remember those moments of the connection, the moment that you need to cling on to that they're going to talk about, that they're going to go back and share with their coworkers or their families or friends. And yes, magic is a part of it. Yes, speaker's a part of it. But the artistry of magic, I learned, is part art of human connection. And that's how I kind of brought that term around. I trademarked it, but it's a differentiator in terms of, so what do you really do? I'm an amazement artist. And no one knows what that is. So they always got to ask, what is it? Well, here's how we do it. We create the culture of amazement, your sales and your service. And so people say, do it again about what you do. And it's effective. It's really the psychology of magic and how that can help people think differently and create mind share, if you know what that is. People are thinking about you when you're not there, how you create that for your team.
And I love the idea of amazement. What you're creating, as you said, is something that's so memorable that they want to see it again. So it builds in a relationship. It builds in that connection, right?
Yeah. Well, it's when people think, I didn't know that was going to happen. And if you really want to dig into the science behind it, when you see something, if you think back to the last thing you're amazing, you forgot about the shopping list and you forgot about the video you were watching, your heightened sense of awareness, you breathe in, you literally have a different chemical reaction to that person in that moment. True fact. So I love how it creates that bond.
But isn't that what we're trying to do as speakers, as entertainers, as MCs, is to create some sort of emotional connection? And, with the concept of amazement, that's very sort of specific. That's one way of doing it. But in order for people to retain information, to get buy-in, they've got to feel something. And that's what we do.
I agree with you. I'm like, the emotional connection is what we do as speakers. That's one of our biggest roles, tying an emotion to a thought process, to a strategy. We certainly remember emotion more than we remember any fact or figure oftentimes. So what we do to create that, magic stories, surprises, surprise and delight, we hear a lot about purpose and passion. Those are emotions we can bring to something to help enunciate a point. I think it's like that exclamation point at the end of it.
And how different is the psychology behind a magic versus the psychology of a great event moment? I mean, that's what you're trying to use as a metaphor, right?
Well, when our listeners design, they're an event. These are our event peeps. And we do remember those moments that maybe are unexpected, that certainly surprised us. And that's how you can engage an attendee more. I mean, I kind of asked you before about when you see something amazing, what happens in the body, and literally you get that little serotonin moment that happens. That's the happy juice that the chemical reaction, or even dopamine. It's like, if someone asks you, hey, you want to see something cool? You want to see something amazing? How hard is it to say, no, I don't think so. But it's because of how that happens. So the psychology behind it. And also, if you look at magic from the true methodology of it, I mean, it's based on belief and building assumption that really isn't the case. So how can we have people come in and believe one thing and then take them, not in a negative way, but have them see something and then like, whoa, I didn't know that was going to happen. I think from an event standpoint, that's how we want to try to build that and structure it. It doesn't have to be outlandish. I always think one of the best questions I work with people is, ask yourself, would it be cool if? Because it's a question that sets you up, like, it doesn't matter what, it could be absolutely outlandish, but it lands on an idea that you then boil down to another idea and really can make something happen. And there's examples of that are really cool. But that's, I don't know if I came around and answered your question there. I think I went around it a little bit, but.
Yeah, no, I think you did. I think you did. I saw somewhere, I don't know where it was, but talking about amazement, I've seen you do some extraordinary things, whether you're emceeing or you're working as a keynote. But did you jump out of an airplane at one point last year? And was that part of the amazement artist persona? Or did United Airlines just really let you down that day?
No, I'm a United Airlines fan, so that's on record. They take good care of me. Right. That was an opener. That was a conference opener for a real estate company. No, the setup was, you get introduced on, I think it was on day two, and I wasn't there. Or no, I think it must have been the opener, because I've been to this one event. So the personality had been established. And no, I was late to the event and we had to get there in time. And of course it was simulated live. But the video was, that was the first time I ever skydived.
Oh, so you took a skydiving video and you captured that. So are you using this at every event? I mean, you have to, right? It's gold, right?
No, I did it once.
You did it once?
I would do it again, but it was... I mean, it was land. It was that conference with that signage and the whole, you know, it was running into the conference. And of course, when the video goes dark and I open up the doors and we are live with the whole get up and sorry, right. I'm late. I was jumping, you know.
That, I mean, that I'd be using that at every repeat performance. Because as you said, it's great that they know your personality. And that's the other thing that's great about having that MC or keynote MC come back year after year is you're building a relationship with them. You're getting them. They're excited to see you. What is John going to do this year?
Very much. Especially, and you've done this as well. I mean, there's the longest running MC engagement I have is coming up on 21 years. It's in this summer. Wow. And I have multiple 10-year plus where it is. We design something different every year we go in. But there's also a great level of trust at that point. I mean, I'm part of the committees. I am, you know, we finish year one and 2 weeks later, I'm in post-con and we're talking about theming and elements for year two.
So tell me a little bit more about, we started talking about you as a co-event planner with them. Are you starting a year out when you're in that position where you're almost a creative director along with them or a consultant, as opposed to when they just hire you for a one-off? You've never met them before. Walk us through what that process looks like where they bring you into MC and what you do to get them ready and prepared for the event.
Yeah, and I would say it depends on if that group has worked with an MC before. I'll even clarify, maybe a professional creative MC before would be a better way of saying that, because some think, oh, you're going to show up and here's the script and I need you to introduce these people. And I'm like, well, you know, you're missing really what we do and how we do it. I like to get involved ahead of time. I want to talk to the keynotes. I want to talk to the content leaders. I want to understand what we want them to feel and how we're going to bridge one topic to the next topic. I look at it as a co-creative director, because some, stage blocking is not their thing. Lighting and audio elements is not their thing. And those all have massive impact on the emotion, going back to that and how it connects with an audience. So I do. I'm not the show up and throw up. I'm the person who wants to understand, be, even if it's a fly on the wall in some of the planning meetings, and I can't do them all like anyone's schedules dictate, but to truly understand the premise, the objectives, the mission, the purpose, because then Scott, then you and I, we can write around that. We have, those are our fundamental building blocks to create a moment they're going to remember, a story tie-in that has hyper relevancy to this project that just finished, that was a big win. And when we can create that relevancy, that's what people want. There's a level of engagement they might not have ever had before. So that's the type of, I think, creative and content involvement and investment that we make.
And I think I saw something about Seven of Hearts. There's like 100,000 playing cards circling around the globe as part of your Pay It Forward mission. Tell me a little bit about
that's
that.
That's a me thing, yeah.
Yeah, and have you ever had someone come up to you at a random event and show you one of your own cards? And what exactly is that, so people understand?
To answer the first part, I mean, I've been in tears when someone's come up in an airport and like, I know you, and show me a Seven of Heart. It is a Pay It Forward type piece where emotional story where I had a unique opportunity to perform for a child in the hospital. And I didn't realize the impact I was having in that given day. And the child, his name was Nathan, he picked the Seven of Hearts for this trick that we do. And he ended up passing the same day, which I learned months after I was there. And from that, I started, I mean, a show which then became a foundation. Now it's in multiple cities around the country, but we do shows for children in a life-threatened condition. It's called Miracles and Magic. And the Seven of Heart is a way that I give to people as I travel. Someone makes a difference in my day and encourage other people to do it, because somehow, somewhere, someone's going to give a Seven of Heart to Nathan's family. I don't even know their last name, you know, Hippolaws, but they're going to learn that their child is still making a difference for other people. So there's my goal of it. It's my passion project. Wrote a book about it. I don't sell the book. It's, well, Amazon sells the book. Everything we do out on a site, it's all by donation, just kind of to help pay and offset the cost of theaters and bringing in entertainers to do the shows.
Don't you have a yearly event and you bring in entertainers and stuff like that? Yeah. And is that to raise money or is it just to raise awareness?
Do both. Generally, the first show is all children. Like A Kid Again is one of the organizations we work with, and they'll bring 700 children, all their siblings, their immediate family members, because these kids fight this together. I mean, the whole family fights a life-threatening illness because that kid gets so much attention. So the goal is just forget about chemo, forget about the shots in hospital, and come enjoy the show. And it is. It's some of the top entertainers in the world. And then the evening show is all public and all the ticket money gets donated. Plus, there's the awareness factor to help kind of do the reach out and build awareness for this organization.
Well, that's great. I mean, I know that's very important to you. Yeah. Yeah. I know. I think Jeff has probably done it 1 year. Civilico, did he come in?
He has been here. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you done his foundation as well?
Of course I have. Win-win's fabulous. That's doing so well. I'm so proud of him.
Yeah. He's doing great on that. Speaking about people feeling proud and proud of, our good friend Jeff Civilico, I think 2 years ago was inducted into the NSA, National Speakers Association Hall of Fame. And you, my friend, were inducted last year. Tell me about that experience. I met you right after you came off on stage. Do you remember?
I don't. No,
okay.
Man.
So let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you what happened. You had just come off on stage, adrenaline flowing through you. You were stunned. Your head wasn't great. And we had a real nice hug outside because you were like, I don't even remember anything that happened. I hope everything went. I mean, you nailed it. But tell me about what that's about. That's a big honor to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Thank you. It was electric. Two things that I remember most. One, I cannot tell you a time I was more nervous to speak in front of a group of people. I mean, shaking. It probably didn't show because we're good, but unbelievably nervous. And that
when I met you afterwards, I was hugging you almost like a trauma victim. You were like, I wanted to put like a warm blanket over you. I mean, you were just so overwhelmed. I mean, trauma is not the right word. You were overwhelmed by the experience.
I was so incredibly honored. And the other piece of it was my three daughters were in the audience, and most of my acceptance was about them and their support and everything that they've done. They've come in with me on trips, and the award was for them because they've had to put up with me being gone and doing what I do. And we're pretty wacky at times. So it was electric, highlight of my life, one of them.
Yeah, well, well-deserved. And, you've been doing it a long time, and you're very successful, and you do a great job at what you do. If there were any speakers maybe listening to this, what would you say enabled you to get to this level? You're in a very elite level right now. And how did you get there? And what advice would you give to other speakers?
I think we hear from a lot of people like, this is what you should do, and this is what you should do. You should have this. And sometimes I fell for that. And you should do what is right for your business. You know, you don't have to do the online learning systems. You don't have to do a video podcast. Do what makes sense for you and your family and your goals. This is a lifestyle business. It's very difficult, but it can be very rewarding. When I say lifestyle, you can see the best places in the world and be paid to go do them and meet some of the most incredible people, right? So I would say, one, build it the way you want to build it, but take guidance from people in the know. Two, realize this is a legit business. If you're going to treat it like a hobby, then it'll be a hobby. But you need to continue to get good at what you do and the product and invest in yourself. And whether it's speech coaches or, you know, investing in the products, the tools, the mindset, the skills to get better at what you do. And always go above and beyond for your client because they're everything. Your brand, you got one chance at messing up your brand of people putting it out there. You have to be you on and off stage and be authentically good at what you do and share that with the people you work with.
I know a big part of your brand we talked a little bit about was the John Petz experience. Now you're branding as an amazement artist. You know, you've wrote a book about the event planning experience called Boring Meetings Suck. What's the fastest way to make a boring meeting not boring?
Oh, gosh, I had so much fun with that book. The fastest way, show up 2 minutes before it starts and be prepared and get in, get out. Not just speak to the length of the meeting because you have an hour plan doesn't mean your meeting has to be an hour. I mean, I'm talking like this is white collar office worker cubicle, you know, because that's my former career, right? That was me. I was going to sales meeting. That was wasting all of my sales meetings time. If I were to write that book today, I wouldn't change any of that aspect, but I would add in more thought process related to when people walk out the door, what do you want to have accomplished? How do you want them to feel? What do you want them to do or think or act on differently? So go in with that mindset and that goal. And once you hit that, then your meeting's on. You can move out. Because I think some of the people get sick of meetings because they're do-over meetings or deja vu. No decision ever takes place. We all get to complain about those. But the other good part of that book was the whole, I think this is what sold it. It's boring meetings suck, get more out of meetings or get out of meetings. And that's what I think some of the interviews picked up. I'm like, what, you're going to teach us how to get out? I'm like, yes, without getting fired. And that was, so, you know, as it was a method to protect your time from the bad, overdone, useless meetings.
Yeah, I mean, event planners have a tough job and there's a lot of pressure on them. I mean, a lot of their decisions are being made half the time on, I hope I don't get fired. So, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, have them take risks to do something different, like bring in an MC, something like that.
Yeah, and they're asked to do more. And of course, what are they happening to their budgets? Oh, we need you to, at times, you know, and look at, you know, food and bev and AV and all that's doubled in the past 5 years, literally doubled. So it can be tricky. But meeting design, I mean, even when you look at, you know, PCMA or MPI and the different elements we learn, or the CMPs out there, we talk about the meeting design when you get in and truly designing some of the experience, the emotional flow that I like to call it, so people engage, connect, and get something out of it on a bigger conference or association level.
Have you had the experience where you're in an audience as an attendee, maybe like at one of the conferences, even at NSA, and don't you get some information about what an audience's experience is, listening to things, where you get engaged, where you're pulling back? I mean, it's a really challenging balancing act for everyone on stage to be able to give information, but to have people leaning in as opposed to when is this going to be done? And that's, once again, another part of our job is to get people primed for that.
Now, I call that kind of reimagining a script. Yeah, I love when we can take something and move it where people are, I know we're not doing much visual here, but they're take someone from sitting back and get them to, you know, that lean in factor. So they're anticipating what is coming. And you can do that by using your words and the story elements and taking something that someone just said and using that to tee up where you're going. And I bet you do this as well. Have you ever, you're sitting there in an audience at a conference that you have no involvement in other than being an attendee. And I'm looking at the lights and I'm looking like, oh my gosh, I hope that, okay, they got the sound fixed. And you know, you're looking at the blocking and you're just, you can't take yourself out of that role sometimes, but you learn and you look around and you're seeing when people look down to go to their phone, right? And you see what happened to cause their disengagement happen right then. So.
Yeah, I don't know if someone doesn't have someone to basically help with that process of drawing people in. I don't know if anyone goes to a meeting leaning in. You know, maybe if you're going to one of the big Apple conferences and they can't wait to the new device is being shown. But almost by definition, I know you say, I think your book was boring meetings suck. Some people would go, meetings suck. You know, why do I want to go to a meeting? And that's what I love about us, either as you, as an opening keynote, as an opening MC, is we shift the energy right from the beginning. They're like, we didn't expect this, especially if it's an MC that they've never used an MC before. That can change the entire trajectory of the meeting.
That's the good old analogy. They didn't want to come, but when they walked out the door, they were so happy they were there.
And I love when I see that transition, or you have people come up to you after a session and they're like, wow, I've never had that kind of experience where I'm laughing, I'm engaged. I actually enjoyed the presenters more. They seem to have shifted a little bit. That's an amazement moment right there. You know, we have this new segment on the show, which I absolutely love because I get to find out a little bit more about you. Just some random questions. It'd be kind of like a speed round. We're going to get to know John Petz a little bit better. And if you want to pass on any of these, you can go ahead and pass. All right, here we go. Mountains, beach, or city for vacation?
Beach, going tomorrow.
Oh, really? Where are you headed?
Yeah, heading to Punta Cana with two of my daughters.
Punta Cana, love it. I have a friend going down to the Dominican Republic, I think this weekend. Where are you staying? Yeah. Hard Rock,
all inclusive. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. I love that place. I did a meeting there for HSBC a few years ago and I was like, oh, this is a pretty nice place. What's one app on your phone you can't live without?
Google Photos.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Quick answer. Yep. Yeah. Love it.
Okay. Cool.
I just love being on a search, like, show me Madrid. Show me this face, this person. And I love just when I'm traveling or in someone's city, like if I'm passing through your city, like I'll take a picture and I'll just, you know, look up where, whatever, Madrid. And I'll send it to some folks who live in Madrid and like, hey, passing by, saying hi. And just, or when I'm with someone and type in their face and just random hellos. I think it's great for that. But yeah, I love photos.
What's your pre-show ritual before going on stage?
I like to laugh. I like to meet audience members when they're still kind of come in. I'll walk out and I'll just make a few friends just to kind of build a connection, get a vibe. And truly, like a couple minutes before hitting, I'll do push-ups and I'll fake laugh just to literally oxygenate the lungs and the brain.
Wow. So you're in a suit just doing push-ups and back. I mean, I'm sure you take the jacket off. Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Oh, this is a great question. Who was your biggest professional influence?
Professional influence. You know, I got to give you two sides. Early on, I mean, magic side, watching David Copperfield as a kid. I mean, on videotape, slow motion, trying to figure it out. You know, that's probably one of the reasons I really wanted to be a magician and do the big, you know, the big touring illusion shows, which I did in my younger years. Now, so there's a lot of speakers who've helped. NSA has brought me a lot of friends. You know, actually, the one I would say Ross Bernstein,
I was going to say, you're going to
speaker,
say
Hall
Ross.
of Fame. How did you know that?
I
But I
just
said this
did.
earlier, a lifestyle business. He helped me. He was a good person because you see that you should. It's like, you know, but I see what he does, and he's a worker, and he's fabulous at what he does, and he travels and takes an extra day here and an extra day here, and realizing, you know, I can do this my way. It's okay that I take my kids. It's okay that I go a day early and stay a day late and work on a different project. But understanding how to really understand this as an event professional and feel the gratitude of the opportunities that we have to see things and meet people and embrace that. And
Oh,
I got to
yeah, I
thank
love
Ross for
that. Yeah,
that.
Ross is an amazing individual, an amazing businessman, amazing speaker. I'm just in awe of what he created. I think he's kind of one of a kind. You know, at most of our NSA meetings, someone's making a joke about, you know, Ross finishing up three keynotes in between the two general sessions, and the two
In
of
two
them were
different cities.
live. Yeah, right. Two of them were live, one virtual on his phone as he was coming to the session. What's
So
something
true.
you're terrible at but enjoy doing anyway?
I'm a gamer, and if I've done four events in a week or something, I need downtime. Me and Madison, we will go play a game, and she picks on me because if I go online and play, I'll get crushed by a bunch of 10-year-olds, and I'm just suck at it. I'm awful. But I can play campaign mode and just turn off the brain and do some useless game. But she and I will do that. So I'm bad at it, but I enjoy it. That or surfing. That'd be the other
Right.
one that I'd like to do, but yeah.
And what do you love most about magic? I know you're more than the magician that you started as, but what would you say you love most about the art of magic, the craft of magic?
The reactions when you do something that people perceive is diabolically impossible. And in your mind, you're like, that was so simple. You just don't know that there's a string or whatever it might be, right? And people ask the question, how'd you do it? And then the best part is they get their friends. And this is one of the things I talk about. They bring up their friends and they have their phone recording and they look at you like, do it again, do it again. That, I mean, that's a moment of connection and awareness and engagement.
It must
I
bring you a
love
lot of
that
joy
aspect.
too, right? I mean, they're
It's
getting joy, you're
fun.
getting joy. It's a big joy fest. That must feel great.
Enjoy. It is, it's a neat aspect. And to bring happiness and to bring that sense of wonderment to get someone out of their shell and react in that way is pretty cool.
Ah, that's great. Well, you know, our time is up, maybe, but we can chat a little bit more afterwards. But it was great to thank you for being on the podcast. And hopefully one day you and I will end up in the same room. One of us keynoting, one of us emceeing, or both of us
So
on
love
different
that.
days. That would be
I
great.
will love that. We're going to make it happen, and I'll see you in July.
I'll definitely see you in July. All right. Thanks, John.
You're welcome. Thank you, Scott.
That's it for now. Thanks once again to eSpeakers, the number one way to find your next perfect speaker. With the deepest catalog of professionals available, you can be assured that the speaker you book will be the absolute best speaker based on your goals, bar none. I've been your host, Scott Bloom, professional MC and comedic keynote speaker. And of course, your connoisseur of connections. Oh, by the way, and if you're interested, you can book me for your next event on eSpeakers Marketplace at eSpeakers.com/marketplace. And if you like what you heard, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. If you love what you heard, drop us a review and don't forget to share with your friends. Thanks so much for listening. Now go out and make your event a great one.